I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
The podcast. So in our first book, The Five Core Conversations for Couples, up off my left shoulder, for those of you who are watching, we talked about the types of conversations that were the most difficult for couples to have. As you folks know, I'm a divorce lawyer. Julie's a family therapist. And we discovered that there were commonalities in both of our offices. And one of those commonalities was conversations that were difficult about intimacy, about sex, about intimacy. And to help us talk a little bit about that today, we have Stephanie Flood, a family and marriage therapist, or marriage and family therapist, relocated from California to Nashville, is my recollection. Yes, good for
that
you.
Is correct.
I like Nashville. Yes. And for the last 15 years, Stephanie has worked with over 1,000 couples on pretty much all intimacy-related issues, including mismatched sex drives. We know a little bit about that here at our house. Mm-hmm. Lack of communication and sexual issues and infidelity. So welcome, Stephanie. We're so happy to have you today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, we're looking forward to talking to you about it. So let's start at the beginning, which is, you know, why is it so hard for couples to talk about sex?
Ooh, let's jump right in. You know, I kind of start with my background a little bit, and I think it plays into a lot as to why couples tend to have these types of issues. And so I grew up in a really conservative household, Christian background. Mom and dad really felt very strongly that that sex was probably the number one thing that I should absolutely not be doing as a teenager, as a young adult, until I was married. And so I signed a purity pledge and placed it on the White House lawn for Bill Clinton. It's a very confusing time.
I love that.
And I had a boyfriend at the time, and oh my goodness gracious, the dog has decided to like.
That's all right. We love dogs. We have them here.
So
no worries.
I had a boyfriend at the time, and that boyfriend and I, that purity pledge kind of went out the window pretty quick.
Yep.
Now that boyfriend ended up becoming my husband, and we are still married, and we have 4 amazing kiddos. But what I really found out as I got into therapy and became a therapist myself was, and even between he and I, were the conversations. We didn't know how to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Basically, the rule and the messaging I got as a kid, and I think is true for a lot of my clients, is don't do the things because, you know, you could get a disease or pregnant or whatever horrid consequence is going to happen to you as a teenager or a young adult. And as once you get married, then it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no idea, like, how to talk about it, the emotional connection, the physical connection. What does that mean? So if you've never grown up in a household where anybody's talking about any of this stuff, and you're kind of getting your views from television, movies, porn, then you have some very usually skewed ideas or total no clue. Like what's okay? What feels good? What doesn't feel good? What ticks your partner off? What doesn't?
Yeah. So it's interesting because what you're talking about really is a lot of shame for a lot of people around sex. And you're only supposed to do it when you're married and it's only behind the closed doors with your partner, those kinds of things. So a lot of that programming, if you will, creates a lot of, you know, sort of shame-based fear about talking and being vulnerable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I really tend to use with my couples intimacy, right? It's the corest part of ourselves. It's really being the most vulnerable with someone else, both men and women. And so when we get ideas from other channels, like say porn or religion or other things, then how we show up with our partner and how we talk about it or lack thereof, then, you know, we get, you know, we get these ideas like, oh, is this who my partner is? So we start to identify our partner as, oh, they, this is what they are, or this is what they do, and this is how we should do. But it doesn't always sit exactly right, right? Because it should be two people having those conversations, not one each individual.
It's interesting because it's almost similar to a conversation couples should have when it comes to finances, in part because they come to the table from different places, right? So you came from a place of a very conservative family. I don't, and I'm going to have to ask you, of course, did your husband come from the same sort of the same background or a different background?
No. And that's how that purity pledge went out real quick.
Cause he was like all in, literally all in.
Yeah. He was all in. I think at the time he was like, I think we'd been dating almost a year at the time. And he was like, hi. What's the plan here? No, he didn't grow up in a conservative. He did have some religious upbringing. He grew up Catholic, but I refer to it as Catholic light. He kind of did the steps. And then by the time I think he was in high school, that was sort of, they were done with that.
So how do you help couples as a therapist? How do you help couples that come to you that are having trouble with intimacy, whether it's specifically with sex or just being, you know, having hard conversations? What are some of sort of your strategies and, you know, techniques that you use to help them?
So one of the things that I kind of feel that I'm pretty good at is, you know, most of the people that are coming to me are in the monogamous zone. They've been married for a decent amount of time. Typically they've got kids. So, you know, these are couples that, you know, for the most part, they have the basics figured out, but the conversation or even the timing tends to be the issue. And so I am really good at helping couples feel really relaxed in talking about it. And so the language that I use, you know, the questions that I ask are typically not questions that they've even asked themselves. Let alone their partner. And so I'm really modeling for them how to have these conversations in a relaxed atmosphere.
Yeah. So ask us a couple of those questions.
Okay. So the very first one I would ask is, what were the rules about sex growing up? What'd you learn? Who taught you? You know, did you have an older sibling that gave you the lowdown? Did mom and dad talk about it?
I got the book, How Babies Were Made. They gave me a book. They probably read it with me. I would say that my parents were.
I wasn't meaning that you had to answer. I just want to know the questions. But
So, but that, you know, for me,
we got to send her an hourly fee.
Okay? Well, but what I love about you, Stephanie, as a therapist, because I kind of do the same thing, is you got to show up vulnerable too, because that, you know, you sit there with your, you know, whatever, and people aren't going to feel comfortable. So I love that you start with your story, your own story. And as a therapist, I do the same thing, which is I share, not overshare, but I do share with people, you know, this was hard for me, or this is what happened. So once you get people to start to kind of go back to the beginning, you know, sort of their sex narrative, we'll call it the sex narrative, right? Is it good? Is it bad? When do you do it? Where do you move them after they sort of have that discussion?
So then the next typical question is, when was it really good? Because for most of us, in that first 6 months of dating or so, things are probably pretty good. You usually have a good sort of chemistry, and it feels easy. And I tell people all the time, like, evolution actually sets us up for that. Like, it's meant to be enjoyable.
It's actually
meant for us to have babies. So, you know, nature has designed us to enjoy the process. So we totally talk about their beginning history. What, you know, what actually worked really well. And then from there, then we talk about, okay, well, where did we start getting stuck? And for a lot of couples, there's usually about 2 to 3 places in a long-term relationship where they get stuck. And the first one is right after kids. Those little people roll in and holy smokes. Like it is almost always the first place that couples get start to drift. The second place where couples start to drift is typically like been married 10 plus years. So the 10 to 15 year mark is usually like when you're looking at the other person and you're like, oh, what is happening? Why are we? And it isn't just about sex typically. It's more about like all the other stuff, finances, emotions, lack of, you know, participation, all of the things. So the drift, right? Yes. You get past that one. And for us lovely ladies, menopause is a killer. Yeah. And again, this is conversations that I just don't think previous generations had any conversation whatsoever about what that was going to look like. Having those conversations about what does menopause do? And for men, really helping men understand, hey, this isn't about her not wanting you anymore. Like, she literally has no drive. Like, the drive is gone. The, you know, and I think for a lot of couples having that conversation and really understand like what's going on there. And then also being able to understand from on the female side, as our male partner gets a little bit older, sometimes things don't work the way they once worked. And again, that's just nature. It's part of getting older, but there's a lot of shame in that. And so women are like, oh my God, he's not attracted to me. This and that or whatever. Men are like, oh my God, like this always worked. Why does it not work? Like, what are we doing? And they, you know, they hide, they go away or use other methods to make themselves feel better. So those are kind of the three spots where most of my couples are coming to me about. And we kind of start to tease out from each of those spots where we could make improvements.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So no, I'm just really thinking about the things that go on with our bodies, whether it's, you know, ED for men or menopause or low sex or no sex drive. They're happening for that individual, but it's really about how the other partner interprets that, right? Yeah. Because if I'm not interested in sex because I have low sex drive or my vajayjay is dry and I don't really want to have sex, then that is something going on with me. But my husband, my partner would think
we can, I think we can leave vajayjay in, okay, I guess.
We can. So, but what I'm saying is that, but that's the, about the relationship stuff that people need to work out in you probably a lot in your office, which is like, hey, this is what it's going on with me. But we all take on, you know, perceiving that it's about you, you know, about the other person. Like, she doesn't like me. She doesn't think I'm attractive anymore. She doesn't, you know, she probably has somebody on the side or whatever.
Yeah. And so we, and unfortunately, most people end up in my office when the house is on fire. Like, if they had come 6 months prior, a year prior, like, it's a lot easier to fix. But usually though, when you get to a therapist's office, as you know, like, oh boy, like this is really, they're really disconnected. So when, we start talking about like what medically might be going on, that helps people get some concrete, like, okay, it isn't just that she doesn't want me or he's not attracted to me or whatever it is. Then the next step from there is what can we do different? Because a lot of times if you just tell people like, well, you know, have a glass of wine and have sex, like, great. Like, I'm 4 glasses in and we are definitely not having sex.
Right. There's that tipping point.
Right. So what we want to do is build in a lot of affection, a lot of positive regard on a daily basis. So that we feel
she's
really
rubbing
close.
My leg, by the way.
I was rubbing his leg.
And so if we help couples do that and start to build small again, kissing regularly, hugging regularly, cuddling in bed, and then we can also help them figure out, well, what what does work? Because maybe penis and vagina sex is not going to be a thing. Okay. Like we may have to grieve that loss, but there are lots of other things that we can do that feel good, that feel connecting, that create that same chemistry, honestly, that, you know, most people are like, oh, again, like, oh, that's embarrassing. Like I've never talked about masturbating in front of my partner before, like all kinds of different things, and helping people, again, get comfortable with the idea that there are other options.
Right.
So let me ask you a little bit about, and I know it's got to come up in your practice, because when we work with folks, it's come up in ours, not only ours, but also in my divorce practice. Let's talk about pornography and its effect on relationships. Positive, negative, both? Neither.
So my personal view on pornography is I can see it as a tool, just like any other sex toy. Like it's enjoyable to watch. And there is something for everybody out there. if you're looking for it, you can find it. Where we tend to get into trouble is when we start keeping it a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for a lot of men, I think that typically is the case, right? Like they're shamed about how big their drive actually is. Like, oh my goodness, I really want to have sex every day. And my wife is definitely not going to be on board. So what am I going to do with that? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to jump on my phone. I'm going to take care of business in 10 minutes. And we're going to go about our time. And I would say about 50% of women have a recognition that that's going on. And then there are 50% that have no idea that their husband is taking care of things by himself.
Yeah.
So when they tend to find that out, like it does feel like a betrayal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen this in my office, you know, several times where a man is masturbating and then he
in
and his wife. No. at home,
this is
usually.
Not your typical podcast, Stephanie, just in case you haven't figured that out.
But then him and his wife are not having sex for I mean, chicken and the egg, right? Like, it, you know, did they stop having sex and then he started using pornography and masturbation, or was it vice versa? But it doesn't matter. It's addicting. The pornography is addicting. And then also, I mean, you can speak to this because this is more your area of expertise, is that it's quick, it's efficient, it's stimulating, and then you may not even be turned on with the ordinary sex that you were having in your bedroom.
Yes, 100%. And, you know, one of the things that I always tell people about porn, it will always love you and it will always be there for you. And that is a very, very dangerous place to be in a marriage, because if you have somebody else, anything else really, that loves you and is always there for you, like, you will turn to that before you turn to your partner, because it's safe, it's easy, it's effective, all your needs are getting met. So porn is one of those things that I think can be useful for couples together if they're watching it together and enjoying it, again, as a toy or a tool. But when it gets to be a solo operation, this is it's very thin ice that you can get on. And, you know, unfortunately for a lot of young men, I have a 15-year-old son. God, I'd hope and pray that that's not a thing. And I don't actually really want to think about it right now. I just know that it is so readily available, and the younger you are when you get going on anything, right? Drugs, alcohol, sex, all of it, like the more likely it is to be a problem as you age. And so for lots of young men, I think that there's just a propensity for that to just to become the default.
Well, the other part of that, you know, an adjunct to that is not just for younger men, but even for men who've been married, for a period of time, is unrealistic expectations. You know, so I see what I see that those people are doing. Why can't you do that for me too? Or why can't we do this? And it becomes, you know, more than a toy and more than a diversion. It becomes something that is, you know, it's almost like, you know, people who kiss in the movies when they wake up in the morning. You know, the rest of us get up and brush our teeth. But in the movies, you know, they're rolling over and kissing and all over each other very first thing in the morning. So it's it strikes me that it does create, right, unrealistic expectations. So how do you, in your office, deal with that sort of issue specifically? Because I think that's something that that we have seen with some regularity.
So I think, you know, the porn industry in and of itself, and Marty Klein actually wrote a really good book about this. He's probably more pro porn actually, but he is a sex therapist, and he wrote a book called His Pleasure or Her Porn or something along those lines, and really talks about the sex industry and the fact that these are actors and actresses for the most part. If you are looking at, you know, more advanced porn, let's go with that. Not your neighborhood porn.
not Tom and Janice across the street pulling the blinds down and turning a light on.
Right, and a video camera. You know, God bless them. But we're looking at like real, you know, like Vivid and those types of, you know, the real thing. They are paid actors and actresses.
Yeah.
And so when I start to talk about that and actually put it in the context of, you know, they put shots in the male parts to keep things much bigger, stronger for longer periods of time. They use makeup and other techniques to express the amount of things that come out of everybody's body. Like, so we get it kind of take the luster out of it, really, is what we do. And that can help because then again, if she is really like, I can't do this, I can't look like that, I can't behave like that, I'm not going to do this, you're going to make her, help her understand that she can say, I'm not an actress. You have a live human who has real emotions, who is actually expressing herself to you, and you are creating that as a man. And that tends to help, like, recenter and rebalance when we start really talking about who they are as humans and their human connection.
Yeah. I think that's really important to think about that. So not everybody would be as lucky as some to come work with you in Nashville, Tennessee, but what would be, you know, if I met you, like, you know, at the Acme bar place that we like to go in Nashville, and I said, oh my God, you're a sex therapist, having some trouble in the bedroom, give me like three tips for dealing, you know, for like working on our sex life, working on our communication, what would they be?
Sound bites.
It's so funny that you say that, because I actually try not to tell people that I'm a sex therapist, because they will do just that at Acme anywhere we go. Like, I'm like, I'm a stay-at-home mom. That's what I do. It's real boring. Because people will ask right away. It's the first, they just lose all the things.
Yes.
So three things that I really, really recommend to couples is constant check-ins. Hey, how is this going for you? How are you feeling about our intimate life? Okay. Are there things that you would really like? Are there things that are just maybe not working?
And hey, honey. No, I'm just
kidding. We have a few minutes left.
Those are really good things. Little check-ins.
Okay. So just talking about it, just checking in on a regular basis. Like, how are you happy with our sex life? Are you, you know, are there things you want to try? And we talk a lot about goal setting. And one of the things that we do on a regular basis is we always have goals, and there's always an intimacy goal, and we check in with those goals on a monthly basis. So I think we have a built-in, what, tip number one. So what are some of the other things that you would suggest?
So tip number two is the one that I was talking about, daily affection.
Mm-hmm.
Daily affection. You cannot hug, kiss, love, tap, cuddle with your partner enough. Yes, okay. Exactly that. Little arm rub, little back rub, the way you greet each other when you, when they come home from the day, when they leave during the day, like those small things, again, create much more comfortability between the two of you and then can help expand from there. And it keeps you close.
Right. And so that's sort of like, we call that keep your motor running. right? Uh-huh. Like you're always, you're comfortable with each other. You're touching each other. So just a question, asking for a friend. If you are trying to engage in just like a physical touch or a hug or a kiss, and your partner automatically goes to
your boobs,
or they automatically think this is an invitation for, a sex, situation. What do you do there?
You know, I think I'll just use my husband because I said boobs, because immediately he would, if I'm doing the dishes, he's like, hey, those look available for me to grab.
So sounds like my husband.
We have had some conversations about I think in our relationship, we've really made intimacy obviously a priority. And so he's not desperate and hungry all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm also not reactionary if he does come up and swipe my butt or grab a boob.
Yeah.
And so I know that that doesn't automatically mean that I have to engage in something bigger.
Okay.
We also have conversations like if he comes up and does something like that, usually I will turn back around, give him a hug and say, hey, are you needing some more? And if the answer is yes, then okay, great. It's 7:30 in the morning and we're trying to get the children out the door. Can we reconvene at this time?
Okay.
As a woman, if I tell my husband, hey, if I brush it off, I have to come back. I have to honor my promise.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Because
agree.
I like trust.
That. Okay. I like that. Okay. So that's
tip number two.
Okay. And then a third tip.
Third tip, which was on my mind and now it just went right away. Third tip for connection. I think really being really honest with each other. If there is such feelings around disconnection and there, because the vulnerability to allow somebody else in is high. And again, we're talking about porn, social media is a one-stop shop for reconnecting with all kinds of people that will pay attention to you really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so if you are feeling lonely in your marriage or hey, that really hurt my feelings and your thought is, hey, I should go find somebody else to make me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it up before it gets any further than that. I know it's a hard conversation. I know it's, oh God, that sucks, but that sucks way less.
Mm-hmm.
Then what could very easily happen. And then you're in my office because we have infidelity issues.
Yes. And then you're in David's office after that, if it doesn't work out. Yes.
So mostly we're trying to keep people out of our office. That's really what we're going for.
Yes, right. Exactly.
We should all be out of business.
Yeah, we had a trainer once who said, see Julie so you don't have to talk to David.
Or listen to Julie.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. Yes. But I think if they take your three tips, then they don't need to see any of us, which I love. So that's great. Well, this has been just a great conversation. I'm super excited that we connected. And how can people get in touch with you? Where can they find you?
They can find me on the Instagram. I'm at Steph Flood of Love. I have a website, floodoflove.com.
I love that.
You have a course.
I see. Course. Yes.
Awesome.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. Yay.
Sure.
Yeah. So if you can't come to Nashville and work with me one-to-one, you can definitely work with me through my course. Basically you get all of the goodness that we just talked about in a much bigger format. Lots of everything is written down. So you can look through pieces of paper if you really want to and be like, oh yes, I'm supposed to do this today. And you basically get 6 full counseling sessions from me,
I love that.
Step by step on how to kind of repair, fix, make better, reconnect, all the things. So yeah,
that's great.
Folks out there, all of her connections, any way to grab a hold of Stephanie, not physically, of course, since that's what we've been talking about, will be in our show notes. Stephanie Flood, you have been a wonderful guest. We thank you so much. And if we do see you in Nashville, because I particularly am a regular visitor, I will not ask you any sex therapist questions. I'll just sort of wink and say, oh, you look familiar, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I would love to hang out with you guys. We can definitely go run up and down Broadway. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. So, folks, we are The Bullits, TheBullitts, www.thebullits.com, at The Bullits on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube, LinkedIn. I think that's it. I'm not sure if there are others. When we have a YouTube channel. So please join us next time. And if you have a moment, click on Stephanie's website. The link will be here. We will see and hear from everyone next time.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast.
Yes, hit the button, hit the subscribe button. That's right.
We are The Bullits. This is the
Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
There you go. Okay.
We always have to get that at the end.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.